Good morning. Today is Thursday, April the 9th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
Oh, better than yesterday. Not as good as tomorrow. How's that?
That's good.
All right.
I can hear an upward trajectory about something.
Yeah, that's right. None of this flatline stuff for me. Uh-uh. Upward and onward. All righty. Why do we say that for you this morning? Petticoat. What is the reason a woman's underskin is called a petticoat?
Seriously, this is the one you picked for me?
Well, I could have gone with you want philanderer? I got that one, too.
No, that's fine. I have no idea about petticoat. None whatsoever.
Originally, the garment was a petticoat, a small coat worn by men under their coat of mail or doublet back when they were knights. Then women adopted the garment. They, too, wore a short or petticoat. But in time, they lengthened the garment and lowered its support until it reached from the waist to below their knees. Fashion statement now taken care of. Feel complete?
Wow. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. So I tried to find one that fit your work. And
yeah.
And the question is, why do we say put a sock in it?
Put a sock in it. Oh, let's see. Sock. We got Mike socks, but I'm sure that's not what we're talking about. I would suspect it had something to do with shoes.
So, no. So, we all know it means to be quiet or to stop talking.
Right.
The origin is gramophones, because the predecessors of record players had large horns used to amplify the sound. Since they had no volume control, if the sound was too loud, listeners were forced to stuff a wadded-up sock inside the horn.
Which probably was better than wearing a sock over your head.
That's true. That's exactly right.
So much easier to dance in polite company that way. Oh, gee. So how's life in the courthouse right now?
So it's obviously very, very different. We are doing most, if not all, of our work with the courts remotely. So we all are able to stay in our offices and appear. The court has set up a Zoom conference. And so every day on YouTube, if you go to the Humboldt County Courts website, it will show you that there's a link to our courts. And that puts you on YouTube, and so the public can watch court, and then we're all invited into the video conference piece of it, which is separate, and so we're able to address the court, address issues about, you know, custody status or sentencing, and then when we are presenting evidence through preliminary hearings, we're doing that through Zoom as well. Sometimes we go to court because there's only a couple of us there doing it, so it's okay to have us there because it's less than 10. But otherwise, we're doing it all by remote. So that has been very interesting.
Yeah, I would imagine it's probably got to save on your travel expenses for bringing in experts.
Well, we're only doing preliminary hearings on those who are in custody, so we have not had any experts yet for that. It's interesting because you quickly find out who doesn't have either computers or internet access. So we have had to bring some folks in from the outlying areas. We bring them into the law library here and set them up with one of our laptops to testify. But otherwise, you know, for a lot of people, it's been kind of nice. Citizens, I mean, to be able to just call in and you know, address the court that way rather than risking, you know, possible getting the virus if you came to the courthouse.
Well, one of the things, I've asked this pretty routinely, do you sense that this is a new way of doing business? Is this something that could be done after the new norm is established? Because I would think that there's some really huge efficiencies that are potentially there, and you're still facing, you know, there's still a presence in the court, but it's just a different kind of presence.
So we could definitely do it for some of the calendars. For example, arraignments. It's really a very simple, you know, documents are handed by the court to the defendant's attorney. They plead. We take notes. We address the court on any issues the court might want to, you know, question us about. So that's been very, very efficient. But as far as hearings and sentencings, there's definitely some aspects of it that don't feel quite as true as perhaps they otherwise would. So I think that that would not be something we would do. And then, of course, the issue that we're seeing with our courts statewide is the right of individuals to be present, whether it be defendants or victims in the courtroom, that some really don't want to give up. So I don't think for hearings it would ever become the norm.
Perhaps some kind of an adaptation of that could help at least speed up the efficiencies of the court, because I can recall numerous times with our discussions that can't get enough judges, can't get enough hours in the courts, can't, and it's all labor related rather than structurally related. And if this makes things a little bit quicker, a little bit easier, perhaps right. That could help to alleviate some of that congestion.
Absolutely. And I will say, Brian, when you brought up experts, we have on occasion, pre this event, handled experts via video conference when both sides have agreed to it. Because, for example, if the experts, at a very far away and the timing would not work for them to come testify, say, at a jury trial, we've accommodated that way. And I think it's worked very well.
So there are some things that might result down the road with this. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, some of the different challenges that courts have obviously are personnel related and structural related, things of that nature. Do you sense that the courts are as sensitive, perhaps, as some of the others are? I'm flashing to the judge in Wisconsin who said that the governor didn't have the right to delay the election, and that caused all kinds of ripples earlier this week. It's part of the cool thing about judges is that they're kind of set apart from, but part of the challenges are that the judges are kind of set apart from. Has there been any discussion that the judges have been having, or the administration for the judges, about what kind of lessons can we learn from this?
Brian, I don't know if they've had discussions, in-house. I know that a tremendous amount comes to us from the statewide judicial council, and that's in part, frankly, the California District Attorneys Association reached out to all of our presiding judges and also included the judicial council, because we were all seeing everybody doing things very differently, and ultimately, there are going to be appeals. There are going to be people who say, I should have had my case heard sooner.
Oh, sure.
And it doesn't matter if there's a virus. So we were asking for more statewide guidance to make sure, everybody was sort of on the same page. And then hopefully, given that it would be the judicial council sending the rules down, they are going to support us down the road, because, it's those courts that are going to decide whether or not what we each did was appropriate. So they have given us, a tremendous amount of rules, including the fact that we could delay hearings and put things out beyond what would normally be the time frames we must follow. So that's been very helpful. One issue, obviously, that is a big concern for me for public safety is the changes we're seeing with regards to who may remain at the jail. And the Judicial Council this week came out with some pretty major changes on that. So we're going through those cases right now to try to see what's going to happen with those cases. But it will result in another large number of people being released from our jail.
Now, is that pre-sentencing?
Yes.
Detainment types?
Right. So it's pre-sentencing, but then it's also for anyone who's on a parole violation, a probation violation, or for someone who is on what we know as a split sentence. The inmates who years ago would have been sentenced to prison but no longer can go to prison for those types of offenses now receive what's known as a split sentence. So they do some of their time at our jail, and then they do the rest of the time out in the community. The new rules apply to all of those categories.
Yeah, that's got to be a little chilling, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because while I agree, you know, they said this won't pertain to, obviously, the serious or violent felonies. It won't apply to domestic violence. It won't apply to driving under the influence. What it doesn't include are, for example, drug charges. And as you know from recent press releases, we have a number of people at the jail who were moving pounds of heroin. So the idea that they would be released is pretty shocking. So we're going to file shortly here. We've gone through a number of these cases and try to find why there are exceptions to those cases in order to hold them in custody. Because frankly, part of our responsibility when we're looking at who should be released is what's the probability that they're going to return to court. And for many of the people who are involved in these types of activities, they're not coming back. So our chance is now to deal with them and get them, you know, the consequences they deserve, or they're gone.
Right. Well, now, is there the old anklet things, home with the home detention, was that part of something that could be included, or is that kind of been, is that passe and not recognized anymore?
Well, the Judicial Council rules came down basically with bail would be set at $0, meaning no bail. They're just out, able to get out. So they didn't provide for those others. We're certainly going to ask for that, but what we also know is that's really only a deterrent for those who abide by rules. Some do, because they know if they don't, there's going to be greater consequences. But for some, it's not something they're going to allow, and they just don't.
Okay, so a little hamstrung on that regard. Is there any new form of incarceration or detainment that is being considered or entertained or thought about as there's more of this separation and these lawsuits about undue concentration and trying to make the prisons less prison-like?
Well, no, because right now there really isn't an alternative. I can say that when this first all happened, I immediately reached out to the jail and said, let's go through and look at everybody who's potentially going to get out in the next 2 to 3 weeks, right? Because if someone's doing, you know, 180 days and they've already done 150, why don't we go ahead and start looking at them for early release with, you know, obviously probation supervision from the day they get out. And we were able to reduce the population in that first week or so by about 55. And right now, today, the jail population is, I think it's 268. Well, we're normally right around 400 or 410. So that's a pretty good population for having more social distancing at the jail. And in fact, you can watch when we do the Zoom conferencing. They're in a classroom, and they're sitting in chairs that are clearly, you know, marked. They're 6 or 8 feet apart from each other. So the jail has really done tremendous, you know, taken tremendous steps to try to accommodate the new rules and making sure there's social distancing.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30. Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Maggie, the concept of this concentrated population in jails, certainly things have changed over the decades of what was acceptable versus what is currently acceptable. You indicated that there are about 120 to 140 individuals no longer inside the facility that the sheriff runs. Should we be concerned that there are a couple, 10 dozen of these people out wandering around in our community that, by all intents and purposes, should be locked up behind the bars and not out in the communities?
So we've gone through and tried to screen, you know, very carefully, obviously, those who are a public safety threat. What that means, Brian, is simply the problem people are those who are the chronic thieves and those sorts of offenders. They're out. And as everyone knows, it's been a significant amount of time since we've had the capacity at our jail to house people who are in on low-level misdemeanors, even though, I shouldn't say low-level, misdemeanors, even though many of them are very, very scary misdemeanors. So that's those are the people that are going to get out again. And, yes, those people are always going to be on our radar and a concern for everyone in our community.
Well, when you're talking about the folks that measure their drugs by a pound scale rather than by ounces, that to me, I mean, that's got to be right up there with some of the other bad guy offenses that are keeping people in the jail or in prison right now. How does the state judicial board or council arrive at that determination of what is an acceptable to release back into the community and what isn't? Or do they just stay at 25,000 feet, broad stroke it, and let the locals deal with it as they need to?
I think they follow what has been sort of the direction that California has gone. So, for example, I think we recently talked about no one who is just, let me rephrase it, no one who is a drug dealer can be sentenced to CDC, our state prison system, anymore. They stay in our local jail. And that's true even for those who are selling quantities of drug that is shocking to the community. So, for example, you know, the recent arrest that involved pounds and pounds with street value of over $300,000, they can never, ever be sentenced to our state prison. They will only be housed at our jail. So how that got determined by our state is beyond me, but that is now sort of the line that generally the judges draw. That's classified as a different crime because of that. And it's true again, you know, when the judicial council said, here are the crimes for which bail will be, you know, remain as it should be set. They made specifically, you know, the violent and serious felonies. They named, like I say, DV cases, things like that. But otherwise, it didn't include any of these other criminals. So I'm going to oppose the release of these drug dealers because, frankly, I do think we get to go back to, and the judicial council said this in their rules, we do get to rely on our California Constitution that specifically talks about protection of the public. And also the probability of that person returning for the next hearing, which I don't think we're going to see with these people.
Now, what about, what is Rush's line? Illustrate the absurd with absurdity. What about some of these international drug cartel folks? So if there was take your pick of whichever one you want, and he or one of their seniors were arrested in Humboldt County, that person could not be sent to state prison or federal prison? It could just only be sentenced to the local jail?
For the local charges, yes. Whether or not the feds wanted to then also prosecute is a different issue. You and I have also talked about that. Sometimes the U.S. Attorney General will step in on those types of cases, and then they go to federal prison.
That's bizarre.
I agree.
Now, is California the only state that's doing this? Is Oregon, Nevada, Arizona, are they emulating what's going on here, or is California out on its own island again?
I think a lot of states have gone in this direction. And so you really have to look at each case individually and say, what are the other factors that are here that should be addressed? So, again, if someone is doing that sort of drug dealing but they're armed, then they could go to prison. If someone's doing that sort of drug dealing and there's some other charge, perhaps they've intimidated a witness not to testify, that's something for which the penalties can change. So we sort of look at it in that sense. But it's been an interesting process for a number of years now, and then this sort of, I think, brings a lot of these same issues front and center all over again.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say bring him home. That would have been perfect.
Oh, yeah, they are. Well, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding.
But, you know, the police are still, you know, they're still, I just charged a number of cases again today of people who are housed at the jail. They're still arresting people, and we're all still here trying to make sure that those that can be held in for public safety are being held in. And reaching out to victims, obviously, that's part of this process now with the number that's perhaps going to get out of jail in the next couple of days. We're trying to reach out to the victims of those crimes to alert them to this and to also let them know, you know, perhaps the hearing's going to be either Friday or Monday. Would they like to appear via Zoom and let the court know of their concerns about this person getting out?
Now, this is only temporary, Maggie, until the shelter at home is relaxed or rescinded?
Yes.
Okay. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, during the break, you kind of beat me to the punch with my question. So why don't you ask yourself the question and provide us the answer?
So the question is, how do we get them back in? How do we get them back to court? How do we get them back in custody? And that will be something that we have to work on whenever this finally ends. Right now, the court tentatively is hoping that we're going to be reopening for business sometime in early June, with that meaning we would be able to resume jury trials. And so once we get back to that place, then we'll have to sort of start the cleanup.
Now, are they able to use those ankle bracelets? I mean, can you monitor that? At least then know where they are?
So without giving away too much information, Brian, there are some people who cut them off.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know. A shocker for all.
Yeah. So that's why, like I say, when people understand that it's like so many things. If someone understands the consequence for not abiding by those rules and keeping the monitor on could be an increase in punishment, we see pretty good compliance. For the people who don't suspect that anything more severe is going to happen to them or who simply don't care, they cut them off. So it works really well for those who you might suspect it would work well for. And for everybody else, it's not really much of a deterrent.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose then probation or bail bondsmen, are they going to have to post bail to get out? Or are they just going to be, sign the paper and don't let the door hit you out?
Right. What the Judicial Council did was they said for these crimes that don't fall under the violent serious felonies, and the other ones that we've talked about, their bail will now be set at $0. So they will just get out without posting bail.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any legislation or pushback through the state county DAs to say, guys, this is goofy? I mean, in mass rather than individual DAs having to do it?
Well, We have lodged a series of letters to try to hopefully address what we think is the best way to handle these sorts of situations. But you know, obviously, so did the Statewide Public Defender Association, and so did other groups. And ultimately, the Judicial Council makes a determination that they feel is, you know, what should be done.
Who's who? The composition of this panel, who are they?
So it's members of the California Supreme Court, some of the presiding judges throughout the state, and then they have a number of non-lawyer members. For example, someone from our state, I believe it's a state senate. So it's just, I think it's about 16 or 17, and they make these decisions.
Huh, that's just, it's interesting that there may, it appears, or I guess maybe the impact, as if it's being done in a vacuum. Instead of
it isn't. I know that they've got a lot they've got to consider. I know that there are rules about, you know, like extending the time we have to get preliminary hearings done. I know those are based on, they recognize it is impossible for us to meet deadlines, you know, such as 10 days when we're not even, you know, courthouse isn't even open and we're doing things by Zoom conferences.
Right.
But at the same time, there are, you know, in these situations, frequently there are changes in rules that are very, very difficult for those of us in the communities to accept.
Well, hopefully it won't last that long and we'll be able to get back to whatever the new norm is. Thanks for coming by, Maggie.
Thank you, Brian. Have a good day and stay safe.
Happy Easter.
Thank you.